And we are live with another one. Hello, all you BC WrestlePod nerds out there. And good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are watching this from and when you are watching this from. But this is the past versions of Mikey and Andrew. And we want to thank you for joining us for a live edition of Grapple Gurus, your BC WrestlePod team that covers all the PLEs, the PPVs, whatever, you know, the acronyms that they're using for all of this now. Who knows at this point? But as I mentioned before, I am Mikey. Joined with me this morning is Andrew. And we are here to cover TNA Rebellion 2024. This was the second Big Four pay-per-view for TNA this year. And we have a lot to discuss because there was great matches. There was fun surprises. There was a lot of things, and they redeemed themselves, and we didn't really have too many technical issues like we did at Sacrifice. So thank you, TNA, for continuing to give us a consistent thing. But Andrew, I don't know about you, but I'm still filled with the adrenaline that was last night.
Yeah, it was crazy. As the day went on yesterday leading up to the card, I was super excited to watch this, and it exceeded my expectations. It was so good. Just every step of the way was just a lot of fun and a lot of excitement.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm super excited to cover it with you. Unfortunately, we are missing our third TNA host, Will, who is down and out temporarily due to illness. But he is watching us as we are doing this. So, hi, Will. We miss you, and we look forward to when you are feeling better to come back to TNA and NXT for all that matter. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be super fantastic. But before we get started with everything, this is a new thing that started over WrestleMania weekend. So before we get started and we jump into the review, remember, me and Andrew are only two people. We like to review wrestling. This is a passion of ours. And the internet wrestling community can be a very good place. However, within the last couple of weeks, things have kind of gotten out of hand. So in order to remind everyone, alrighty. So we're thrilled to invite you to dive into the world of wrestling with us at BC WrestlePod. Your opinions and insights are what make our wrestling community vibrant and diverse. Whether you're a longtime fan or new to the scene, your perspective is valuable. However, when sharing thoughts or commenting, let's remember to keep the conversation respectful and supportive. Wrestling is a passion we all share, and it's in our spirited discussions that we learn and grow together. So, let's celebrate our favorite moments, discuss the incredible matches, and maybe even debate the outcomes with kindness and respect. This has been your warning. If I find that you are mentioning or in the comments being really hateful to other hosts or other people in the chat, I will not be afraid to block you. You will get blocked. This is your one and warning. We good? We good. All right. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's talk about why we're really here, Andrew. Boy, there's not enough words in the English dictionary to hide my excitement of reviewing this. This is going to be good. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go for it.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing. Yeah, this was, it was such a fun night. So fun. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. If you have seen it, it's probably worth watching again.
In all honesty, like, we can, in 2024, and this is not because I'm a huge TNA fan right now and I've been watching for the last 3.5 years, but I feel that we cannot keep sleeping on TNA because so far this year, they have been consistent in all their pay-per-views and their weeklies. Yes, there are some things we critique, but this is the most consistent product from the week-to-week basis that we cover here at BC WrestlePod. And I need everybody to start getting on board because they have found a formula for success that works for them. And we want to share this hidden gem with other people because there's a lot of talent, super fantastic, and they utilize everybody on their small roster too. So everyone gets some sort of TV time, which is fantastic. But let us begin. We are here to cover TNA Wrestling's Rebellion 2024 that took place on Saturday, April 20th. From the Palms in Las Vegas, Nevada, here we see our main man, the wanted man, Nick Nemeth, who is the poster boy for this poster. So let's just jump right in. We began Rebellion with the countdown show, so we had a whole hour before the main card started, and we got three matches, so we're going to cover these, beginning with our opener to the countdown to Rebellion, a six-man tag between ABC, Ace Austin and Chris Bay, teaming up with the UK sensation and new assignee to TNA, Leon Slater, taking on the team of the Rascals and a newly returned Myron Reed. This was a wild match. Everybody was flying all over the place. And this is how you kick off the show. Be like, oh, we have a pay-per-view. Not sure if you want to buy it. Watch this match and show and let us showcase why you should purchase this pay-per-view.
Yeah, we've seen ABC and the Rascals go against each other for, you know, the last year or so consistently. And part of that has just been the amount of tag teams that are in TNA right now, but them also being two of the top tag teams, not just in TNA, but in general in wrestling right now. But it makes sense that we see this constantly, because every time we see some iteration of these four face each other, it's incredible. They're so good. They're so high energy. They're so fast paced, whether it's singles moves or working together as a tag team. They're so fluid and come up with so many exciting things. Obviously, Myron Reed has a history with the Rascals. He was a part of the faction. Now it seems like he's actually returning for good, hopefully, to the Rascals. And we'll get this, like, the strength of them back. But Leon Slater coming in here, too. I mean, he's almost a decade younger than everyone else in this match, which is crazy because they're all, like, not even in their 30s yet. But he kept up with them. This felt like we all knew what we could get from the other five. But it was, let's show you that Leon Slater got signed for a reason. And he kept up with him. He looked great. He was in there fluently with ABC. He was able, you know, he had a few spots where Myron Reed was like, hey, let me show you what I can do. And Leon Slater was like, okay, I can do that too. Anything you can do, I can do better, kind of a thing. And it was great. It was back and forth. It was super high energy, nonstop action. It was a great opener to really get us excited for the rest of the card. And like you said, this is how you start off a pay-per-view, building up to, you know, what we got for the rest of the night.
It definitely was. I think one of the highlights for this match in particular is that that Leon Slater went over the top turnbuckle and did the flip into them. And then Myron Reed followed it up by doing it himself too. It's just like, I would love to see Myron and Leon go at it for a little bit. And just because I think it would be fantastic if we throw Kevin Knight into the mix too. Jeez. I think those three have the potential to be like, ground control, we got to keep, these boys are airborne 24/7. We need to figure out what we're doing for them.
Well, and the fact that Leon Slater picked up the pin here on Myron Reed could totally build to that. You know, Myron Reed wants to get that back, you know, so seeing them go against each other, I wouldn't hate seeing Slater kind of hang out with ABC and kind of get some mentorship from them, especially because they're older, they have more experience, especially in TNA. They know kind of like how the world works there. And I feel like he'd be a good fit in with them, whether he joined them long term or just kind of as like, you know, a friend of theirs kind of thing. But it would bring some interesting aspects to this feud between these two teams, and getting to see Slater and Reed go against each other a few times would be pretty awesome.
Absolutely. This was a really fun way to open the countdown show. And it's a good reason as to, hey, if you're not sure about watching TNA, let this be one of the matches you watch. We leave this match with ABC and Leon Slater picking up the victory, as we said. We get a quick backstage segment with First Class, so that is AJ Francis and Rich Swann's tag team. They basically hype up Rich Swann's match against Joe Hendry on the main card, and then we get a debut of the Main Boy Mafia, which is like a group of some sort.
Mafia.
Okay, thank you for the correction. There was only one name, and that was Young Block Boy. I was like, okay, I think he's a producer. I've heard that before. I'm just like, it was a thing. I mean, I'm still trying to get used to First Class as an entity in itself, and knowing that AJ Francis has all these connections when it comes to the music world, which is I love, because I thought it was one of the more fantastical parts when Hit Row and WWE were a thing when Swerve was still there. I think that was a fun thing. It's just getting me used to it being in TNA, but I'm open to it. I'm not going to knock it for it. Okay. So from this backstage segment, we get into our second match of the evening, which was also a surprise by the way it ended, but we will talk about it. We get our digital media championship. This is Crazy Steve, our digital media champion, taking on the challenger, Laredo Kid. This is a rematch of sort, and the way that we've kind of gotten to this point has been a little convoluted because Laredo Kid was supposed to fight Crazy Steve for the title at Sacrifice, but because of travel issues, he was unable to do so. Then we got that beautiful sit-down interview learning more about Laredo Kid that made me love him even more. Then we got the match 2 weeks ago at the TNA episode, which was kind of, it wasn't bad, but it was very okay because it ended weirdly. Then I'm like, okay, we're getting a rematch. Me and you both agree that we wish there was some sort of stipulation for it, like falls count anywhere, no DQ. But nonetheless, I was excited. And then the ending happened out of nowhere, and we have a new digital media champion, question mark? I was very surprised that we had Crazy Steve lose the title here.
Yeah, I mean, this match was definitely better than the first one. A commentary tried to point at it that Laredo Kid wasn't quite feeling himself, so he seemed to have started off not like he normally would in the first match, which kind of led to the DQ there. So they were starting off with better energy. The chemistry between the two of them seemed to fit a lot better. Crazy Steve seemed a lot more comfortable wrestling like the base for the lucha style, and there was just more action in it. I said this during the live watch along, but I still don't like that when Crazy Steve was getting cheered by the fans, that he was trying to like turn them against him, because I feel like if the fans are going to go with you, like let them go with you. Fans can like heels and cheer for heels. That's totally fine. We've seen that in the past, and it just keeps it more interesting. But outside of that, I thought it was a really fun match between the two of them. There were two matches that were kind of my lower points of the night, and this was one of them. And that's only because everything else was so good that this was just a little dip. So it's not like it was bad. It was really good. Everything else was just excellent. And it was crazy. Like, I did not expect Laredo Kid to win this. He popped up when Crazy Steve went up to the top turnbuckle, hit Laredo fly or whatever it is, kind of a like modified Spanish fly off the top turnbuckle, and got the win. But I'm interested to see where we're going to go with this. You know, is he going to rematch Crazy Steve? Because Crazy Steve should get a rematch. Is there going to be more to that rematch that we're going to see? Are we going to see a turn in some way with Laredo Kid? Are we going to get to see him reign as the digital media champion? And that means we're going to maybe learn some more from him and see some more development, which I would love, because he kind of is generic lucha number 5 right now. And I would like to see more because they gave us a bit of his past. So maybe we'll get to see a change as this title goes, and we'll get to actually have a lucha libre champion in an American promotion that's not Rey Mysterio. So it would be really fun to see where they could go with this. So I hope they do this well, and I hope they keep it interesting.
I agree. I am looking forward to seeing where we go with Laredo and Crazy Steve next. I was pleasantly surprised that Laredo has it, but as we learned from his sit-down interview and become more of a fan with him, I do agree with you, Andrew. I really hope that this leads to more character development for Laredo outside of generic wrestler number 5, as you have dubbed it, which is fantastic. But I thought this was a really fun match. And that's going to be a consistent thing I'm saying, is because there was no match on this card, both on the countdown and on the main show, that was just like anything below a B, which was nuts. And no, that's not us being biased, because the in-ring work was actually very solid, which you cannot say for a lot of other companies, but I digress. From this match, we quickly go backstage where we are introduced to Steph DeLander. And of course, as the world knows, Matt Cardona was supposed to be accompanying Steph and be a part of this match. Unfortunately, he got injured over the week, so he could no longer be there. So in order to help Steph out, we had the Good Hands step in and substitute, because Steph hired them. The Good Hands just need to be hired out to whoever needs help on TNA roster. And look, I'm not going to complain. I think the Good Hands are a phenomenal tag team. They're also a very funny comedic tag team as well. So when we get to the Knockouts World Championship match later in the review. We're going to talk more about them, but I was stoked to see Good Hands and Steph kind of come together in this weird amalgamation of funniness, which is great, which then leads us into our final match on the Countdown show, and one that I was really happy with by the end of it, because all four of these women killed it. For the Knockouts World Tag Team Championships, we have our defending champs, Spitfire, Danny Luna, and Jody Threat, taking on Decay, Rosemary, and Havoc. This is DK's rematch clause. And again, I appreciate Tom Hannafan and Matthew Raywald for recapping all the things that went down with this, because MK Ultra were tagged. DK won the titles from MK Ultra at Hard to Kill. Then they lost it back. Then Spitfire won the titles from MK Ultra. And then DK decided to revoke their rematch clause for this pay-per-view against Spitfire. It's really difficult to follow through when you only have three Knockouts tag teams in the division. But now technically we still have three, but we're going to see as the weeks go by what that relationship between Alicia Edwards and Masha Slamovich is going to be. But I digress. This match on paper, and we talked about it during the reviews leading into this, that we were hoping that they weren't going to continue to hot potato this thing. But I have to say, I was very happy with this match. I thought this was a lot of fun. I loved that it took Jody and Danny multiple attempts to try to keep Havoc down as the big hoss for Decay. Rosemary is always fantastic. The fact that she's still doing this at 40 years old and for being this character and in TNA for as long as she have is great. Also, it reminded me how great Danny Luna is, especially when we looked up the median age for all these women. She is what, like almost half their age?
She's 10 years younger than her tag team partner and 15 years younger than Rosemary.
Oh, and she's so talented. I love it. But this was a phenomenal tag team match. And again, actual tag team maneuvers were utilized in this match. We can't stress it enough how we need that in tag team wrestling. But Andrew, what were your thoughts on our Knockouts World Tag Team Championship match?
Yeah, I was really hoping that we weren't going to see another exchange, because going into January, since January, we've had four different title runs. MKUltra had two, Decay had one, and Spitfire had one, or has one. So we really need to have a sustained reign. We also need to have more tag teams in the division. But I was excited seeing this. You know, one of the things I was really looking forward to was getting to see Danny Luna face off against Havoc. You know, the two powerhouses, and they did a great job with them working together. I'm a huge fan of Danny Luna since I saw her with Subculture and her match against Jordan Grace when they were over in England. I think she is going to be one of these, you know, the next generation of TNA wrestlers. Phenomenal. I love her with Jody Threat. They're a great tag team, and the two of these teams going against each other was great to see, because we haven't really seen these two tag teams go against each other. We've seen MK Ultra face both of them, and the experience that they all bring into it, because even though Danny Luna is only 25, I think she's been wrestling for like 8 years or something like that. So there's a lot of experience in there. They worked really well together. They built up the match really nicely. It was a really good showing for both sides. It'll be interesting to see where we're going to go from here. And this is where, if we had more in the tag division, it would be really good, because we could see Decay kind of bounce back from this loss by destroying some of the lower tag teams, while Spitfire was defending those tag titles against some of the other challengers. We kind of get an idea of who the next challengers are going to be. I hope we get some build to it, rather than just being like, okay, cool, well, we don't have anyone else, so it's like throw one together and put them in the tag team picture. So I'm hoping we're having some building going on behind the scenes. I will say, this is not a knock against anything that we got or TNA itself. We've gotten a lot of surprise new signees. We got some tonight, last night, and it's really fun. it's time to start having some knockouts be some of those signees that we're getting, whether it's singles or tag teams. But this match was great. I was happy to see that Spitfire retained the title. I love their tag team combination move, their finisher. And I hope we get to see a nice little run from them, because I think it's, you know, I think Danny Luna and Jody Threat have kind of earned it to be recognized as champions for a little while.
I agree. I hope that with new signees coming down the pipeline, because we have the rest of 2024, I hope we get to see the Knockouts division expand. Mm-hmm. And not to say that the Knockouts that we have aren't going to cut it, but with Deonna and Trinity kind of going off now and that their tenure with TNA has done, I feel that it's time to start signing some people. I don't know if she would stay, but I would love to see Steph stick around for a little bit longer. If this is a one-off, I enjoyed the time I had, but I would love to see her for more. So that is fantastic. But the other thing about this match is that after it was over, we had Masha Slamovich and Alicia Edwards come out. Masha was ready for a fight. Alicia was in a ball. It was in a dress with the kendo stick. I was like, I like the contradiction in presentation, but girl, are we really going to try to start a fight in a dress? That's not advantageous. So we've been playing this will they, won't they relationship with Masha and Alicia, because as we know, Killer Kelly is taking some time off, but she is still signed with TNA. So Alicia seems to maybe be aligning herself with Masha, but then we find out later that we still don't know what's going to be happening with it. So I do hope that Alicia does become, you know, partner for Masha for a little bit while Killer Kelly is out, because I think, one, it keeps Masha in on our television screen, which is never a bad thing for me. But I also feel that this is also a good thing for Alicia, because now we can see her be something other than just the system's valet, which she has been at the moment. I would love to see her back in the ring.
And it makes sense, too, that if Killer Kelly's going to come back after she's had a bit of a break, you build up Alicia and Masha. Eventually, they have a showdown with Spitfire, and maybe they take the titles. And then, of course, you have it build up to an eventual descent between the two of them. Alicia and the system kind of turn on Masha, and Killer Kelly returns to make the save. Or you can do the opposite and have Masha decide she's done with this and, you know, calls back Killer Kelly, and they are like, okay, cool, you were convenient when I didn't have my friend with me, but now she's back and this is my actual partner, kind of a thing. But there's a lot of opportunities there and could be some fun stories.
Absolutely. We leave this last match on the Countdown show and we end Countdown to Rebellion with a sit-in protest, because we are told after we go through the entire main card of Rebellion, thanks to Matthew Raywald and Tom Hannafin, that opening up Rebellion, the main card, would be the X Division Championship. Before they get a chance to explain everything, we get local talent, which I'm going to assume these are local wrestlers. They come down and they're having a sit-in protest because they are with Mustafa Ali and they believe that Jake something shouldn't be in the championship match because Jake is too big. Lest we forget, though, the whole thing about the X Division, ladies and gentlemen and non-binary folks, is that it's no limits, not weight limits. And so they have a sit-down protest, and then who should come out to kind of clear the ring but Cody Deaner, the unofficial mascot for TNA? I don't know. We've talked about this before. I need more direction for this, but ultimately this was the mascot character getting everyone hyped for the main card. He helps clear the ring. And thus, that is where Countdown to Rebellion ends, with Deaner clearing the ring and getting ready for what's about to open the main card. I was at a loss of words of what we saw.
Like you said, TNA is really good at using everybody. And so I feel like when they have big shows like this, they try to figure out, like, okay, how can we use some people that aren't going to be in any of the matches or aren't going to be in any of the setups going forward to just do some fun stuff. So this was a way for Deaner to get used. He's been involved with Jake something and Mustafa Ali and all that kind of storyline. So that kind of made sense. I will say this was, I don't want to say the most interesting use of this whole People's Choice thing, but it was the most believable, maybe is the word. it worked the best so far out of all of his stuff, because he kind of played into that. I will have also say that when you take it out of the storyline, it also is like, I don't know how good of a choice it is to have someone you're trying to make a face essentially attack peaceful protesters. But, you know, we were all there for it because it was part of the story, you know, and it was fun. It was a silly, fun wrestling segment, and it got the show started.
It did. And that is what we're going to do now. We leave the countdown, and we now enter the main card for Rebellion. We get this very fun spaghetti western type of cold open with Nick Nemeth walking around Las Vegas with the system following behind him, while also highlighting all the matches that will be occurring and getting quick recaps of them. I love that TNA now has got some production money, because these things are so much fun. This cold open was fantastic. I love me a good spaghetti western type of feel with the song that was playing and just everything that was happening, because Nick Nemeth is the wanted man. And there was a bounty that the system were trying to collect in the cold open as they were all going around Vegas. Loved it. It's fantastic. And once we got the welcome from our commentator team, we just jumped straight into the action for the main card, because we open the main card for Rebellion for the X Division Championship match. Mustafa Ali defending his title against the winner of the, you know, X Division referendum match, basically the number one contender in Jake something. Andrew, I don't know about you, but when we were watching this match had me gassed the whole way through. The bell rang, and then these two men went at it for 10 whole minutes. Holy crap, this was a way to open the show.
Yeah, just like the A.B. Slater versus the Rascals match to open up the countdown, this opening up the main card was insane. It was so good. You know, I said it during the watch along, and I said it previously when we watched Jake. He works so well with high flyers because he's so strong, but he's also so athletic. He can move really well. It was a great match. I loved seeing the two of them wrestle. They are just incredible in-ring performers, both in the performance aspect as well as the actual physical execution of what they do. It was just so fun to watch, so entertaining. And I will say I was incredibly surprised by the outcome. I'm interested to see where we're going to go from here. And it also makes me feel like this is not the end of this or this reign.
No. And to kind of echo what Andrew said, leading into this match, we weren't sure how long Mustafa Ali was going to be here. When we got word towards the beginning of the year after Hard to Kill, and we got that little promo package that Ali was coming, we heard that Ali had signed on for a couple of dates, and he technically was supposed to be done by the end of March. As we see, we are now at the end of April, and because Mustafa Ali is still X Division champion, I hope that means that he's going to be staying a little bit longer. You know, I was not sure who would walk out of this. We both had picked Jake to become our new champion, and we were working under the assumption that this was coming to an end for Ali as his dates were kind of closing up with TNA. But man, they both hit their finishers and shenanigans involved, and still couldn't put either one of them, couldn't put the other away. So towards the end, I was not sure who was walking out, because they both hit their finishers and both opponents kicked out of said finishers. This was wild. The security team got involved, and that still wasn't enough to keep Jake down. But like you said, with the ending sequence, Ali did pick up the victory, but because he had, you know, help from the ropes to keep Jake down, I hope, one, like you said, this doesn't spell the end for Ali's tenure in TNA, because he is currently still champion. But I also hope we get a rematch at either, you know, the next two pay-per-views, whether that would be Under Siege or Against All Odds. I would love to see this feud continue. But Ali is still our X Division champion. And even though I am a big fan of Jake something, I have to admit it, in Ali, we trust.
Yeah, this is it. And this is the area where, you know, people that look down on TNA or just don't even think about it, really. Like, this story that Ali is doing is the kind of work that he should have been allowed to do in a bigger promotion. And so it makes me really appreciate what TNA is doing and how they will let these storylines go. They respect what people are doing outside of their company. I mean, the fact that they talk about Mustafa Ali is not only undefeated in TNA, but he's undefeated like the last 8 months or something like that across all the promotions he's appeared in. They just honor those things that are happening in the world of wrestling instead of trying to be an island. And it's really that ability to focus on what they're doing and the stories that they're telling. It gives a lot more meaning and respect to the titles and the people that hold them and the people that are wrestling for them. This, what they're doing with Mustafa Ali in the X division has been great. And yeah, the only reason I thought Jake would win, well, the two reasons is I really want good things for Jake as well. But also, I assumed that Mustafa Ali was moving on to other things. So if he's going to stay here in TNA, I am all for it. Keep Ali there. Make him one of the top X division champions. Hell, let him wear that title for a while and eventually go after the world title too. I'm down to see Ali decide he wants to go for that title too.
Yeah, I hope that in this 2024 version of TNA, because Ali walked out as champion still, I hope that for as ever long as Ali wants to stay in TNA, I would love for him to become a big player, not just in the X division, but just in the men's division in general, because I want to see him fight so many people that we have on the roster, especially some new signees and some returning folks that we'll talk about later in the evening. But this was a stellar way to open up Rebellion. This was a fantastic match. And I am honestly, if this were a video game, it'd be like, hey, so what would the starter pack in order for me to be caught up on, you know, this 30,000 entry in the series? I'm like, honestly, I would put this in the modern, like, starter pack for me. This is an example of you want to see how crazy wrestling can get in under 10 minutes with people who shouldn't be able to do the things they're going to. I would show them this mesh, honestly. I feel like I would be cheating, though, because I probably show a lot of TNA matches within the last 2 years or so. I'll be like, yeah, I'm just putting it out there. All right. So we leave our opener match, which was really, really great. And then we head into our secondary match. So this is the first of two matches that were not for any sort of titles. But we have Rich Swann taking on Joe Hendry. The way we got here is Joe and Rich were friends and AJ kept playing in Rich's ear, saying, be like, dude, Joe doesn't have your back. You know, you're always getting your butt whipped and all the time. And so AJ and Joe have been beefing since Hard to Kill, which has been a really fun through line the last couple of months, which culminated in a match between Joe Hendry and AJ Francis. AJ and Joe were trying to hit each other with the chair. Rich Swann steps in to stop what looked like to be AJ Francis. Then Rich Swann turned on Joe Hendry by hitting him with the chair, allowing AJ to pick up the victory. And so Joe wants a one-on-one match with Rich to get back at him for being attacked with the chair. Look, like we said when we were covering the Countdown show, this was the second match out of everything that inherently on paper, and by the end of it, was not horrible. This was a good B match. The story has been fun to be telling with this. Joe Hendry is always fantastic on my television screen. But I will say I was just like, all right, it served its purpose. Rich Swann, spoiler alert, Rich Swann picked up the victory here. And it feels that we are going to be continuing with this feud. But what I'm hoping, and I'll talk about it after I give Andrew the floor a little bit, because the numbers game is hurting Joe Hendry. There's only one person who could come and help Joe Hendry out. And I'm going to save that. But Andrew, how do we feel about Hendry taking on Swann in this bout?
Yeah, I mean, this was a fun, solid match. Like you said, this was, you know, this would have been a top tier match on a regular week of TNA, but considering the top tier pay-per-view matches that we got from everything else was the only reason that this just felt like it wasn't at that same level. But it was a good match. I think they are definitely playing into, and when we look back at what's happened with this story so far, Hendry is trying to overcome these odds. You know, before it was him dealing with AJ Francis, who kind of would attack him from behind or cheap shot him. And then Rich Swann, you know, attacked him, you know, turned on him. And so then it was 2-on-1. We got a lot of like the people outside the ring kind of involved. AJ Francis obviously got involved as well. And eventually there was some more shenanigans that led to the loss. So yeah, it feels like they're building up to something. I do feel like Joe Hendry is going to need to find some backup in some sort. I don't know if that's going to be people who are already in TNA or if it's going to be some new or at least just returning, you know, surprise people. But I think we are going to see him trying to overcome the kind of numbers and power game from First Class. But I think there's a high likelihood that it's going to be at least fun and entertaining. There's some people, you know, like, I don't know why the name, you know, Dirty Dango just came to mind, because it feels like that whole team left and are going to be coming back as, you know, other iterations. So maybe people like that we haven't seen for a little while might come back and join up with Joe Hendry. Or maybe we'll see some people who are tired of like First Class just running around, you know, thinking that they're special in TNA just because they want to be and haven't actually earned much. But all in all, you know, it kept the story going. It told things that we needed to see. It was a solid match. Bummed that Joe Hendry lost, but I think that just means we're going to get to see more of the story.
It is. And first and foremost, this was the best use of AI that I've seen with Joe Hendry's entrance. Doing AI to have Rich Swann and AJ Francis do the whole entire music video, which was super fantastic and clever. But more importantly, too, this is where I get in full-blown conspiracy theories. You mentioned Dirty Dango, which I would really love, because technically there is history there. Because remember, when they were trying to figure out who attacked Santino, it was Dango and it was Joe Hendry on the case doing the whole investigative murder board shtick. Fantastic. The other one is, I want my reunion of Joy Hendry, and Yuya Uemura. Make it happen, TNA, please. I want to see my boys back together, even if it's for one night only. But I am excited. This is one of the sillier stories that we are telling in TNA right now, but I'm enjoying it because sometimes we need to balance the intensity of a lot of the feuds that we get with some levity in comedy. And this is more on the comedic side. But I'm super happy with this and more Joe Hendry and Rich Swann. I am here for. All right, Andrew, strap yourself in because we have things to talk about this one. Yikes. When I say this match from beginning to end was nuts, and then the ending had me worried because of how it... Ooh. Okay, before we get into this. So, third match on the main card. A Full Metal Mayhem match. So for those of you who do not know, this is basically no DQ with ladders, tables, weaponry, anything you can find. One of my favorite match types outside of Monsters Ball and TNA. Super fantastic. And this was a grudge match between Eric Young and Frankie Kazarian. Some vets in the industry, but also vets in TNA's history as well. This has been a story that has been told since the night after Hard to Kill. Leading into all of this, we had them fight each other. They went up against each other to see who would be facing Moose at Sacrifice for the TNA World Championship, in which Eric Young won. We had a baller match between Moose and Eric Young at Sacrifice, but ultimately it ended up Frankie Kazarian dressing up as a cameraman, choking out Eric Young with a cable cord to cost Eric Young the match at Sacrifice. And then Eric Young realizing that Frankie is not the same person he knew. Eric Young had a conversation with his Violent by Design self, and he needed to dig deep into those darker recesses of his character in order to be able to fight the quote-unquote king of TNA now. From beginning to end, Andrew, they left nothing on the table because anything and everything was used. And we'll talk about the ending in a little bit of why we were very concerned. But before that ending spot, Andrew, How did we feel about this Full Metal Mayhem grudge match?
This was great. You know, you've got two vets in Kazarian and EY that just, they know how to wrestle great matches. They know each other very well. I love the fact that commentary pointed out that this is only their second Full Metal Mayhem match, and their previous one was, they faced each other. It was a tag team Full Metal Mayhem match. And so it for the feud that we've been getting between these two, this felt like the proper build. Like, it had to keep going and going. I'm not sure where we're going to go with either of these two after this, but the things that they put each other through, both like literally and mentally, was insane. The Eric Young hitting an elbow drop on Frankie Kazarian, who was inside of a trash can, was insane. Going through a couple of the tables and things like that, you know, from the apron to the floor, just the way they were just beating the crap out of each other. It was insane. It was a great hardcore match. I think I said when we were watching it, like, this is what other promotions need to see, having, you know, no DQ style matches, because, I mean, we eventually got some blood, though I don't think it was planned. There was no blood up until that spot, but it still felt like what a match with no rules should feel like. And this was a phenomenal match. It was great. It felt like this was for a title, even though there was no title on the line. There, you could feel the stakes that were involved for both of these guys.
Absolutely. All right. So before we talk about the ending sequence, one of my favorite things is that they did everything. We had cookie sheets. We had tables. We had EY trying to fight Cherokee Kazarian to get out of the trash can. We had an appearance by Janice, the nails with the 2x4 with the nails in it, which was fantastic to watch. All right, but we can't be dancing around the issue for longer. So, all right, let's talk about the ending to this match, because this was... All right, I got to calm myself. So we're going to talk about this in a little bit of graphic detail, because it was kind of graphic to watch. And if you are not a fan of blood or extra gory details, then this is the part where you're going to tune out, and then you can skip ahead a couple of seconds to get to our next match, but let's talk about it. So EY and Kazarian are battling up on the top rope. There is a table that is set up in the ring. Eric Young was going for a pile driver, what it seemed to be like, but then the low blow from Frankie Kazarian happens, in which Kazarian hits the flux capacitor off the top, but they only catch the edge of the table. And Eric Young gets busted wide open because they only hit the edge. Frankie ends up getting the pin here, but that was a really scary ending, Andrew.
Yeah.
Like, the actual medical doctor had to come out immediately after this match was over to check on Eric Young because he was busted wide open.
Yeah, it was scary to begin with, because when Frankie set up the table, he set it up lengthwise from the corner instead of widthwise, which they usually do. So when you come off, you hit the middle. When they went and they eventually went off the top turnbuckle and hit the table, they caught that corner. And it's actually, even though it was brutal and obviously rough, especially on Eric Young, I think if the table had been missed or it wasn't there at all, would have been even worse, because I think we would have had EY land on his head on the mat, and that could have been, you know, a neck injury or something right there. I hope from Eric Young it's just, you know, superficial, just a laceration or something on his head. I hope there's no concussion or any neck injuries or anything like that. And same with Frankie. You know, Frankie could have got hurt too in there. He could have hurt his shoulder, torn something. You know, there's a lot of chances. So I hope both of these guys are okay. And as funny as it might sound, I hope it's just some staples or stitches or something that has to come out of this. But it was brutal. And I mean, the fact that these guys are both in their 40s, they've been wrestling for so long, and they went for something like that, is insane. I'm interested to see where we're going to go from this. Eric Young has kind of unlocked this, you know, insane sanity design side of himself. So I think we could see him come back and really, like, that side be prominent now. And who knows what we're going to get from that. I think Frankie picking up the victory here, can have him try to move on from this and really say, like, see, I did it. Like, I won. I am the king, and try to move forward with that. But I want to see more of what we got from these two in this ring from storytelling, because that's the most interested I've been in this new heel, Frankie Kazarian. So, like I said, I hope everyone's okay. I hope we get to see more of them. But yeah, it was kind of scary. It was like, I was shocked. And to see the condition of that table and those jagged pieces after they went through it was pretty frightening. But yeah, like I said, I hope everyone's all right from it.
I hope so too. And I'm going to find it interesting if we continue with this feud. They just had a Full Metal Mayhem match. So where do we go next with this? It's going to be nuts. But we leave this match. We head backstage really quickly with Nick Nemeth, who tells us that, you know, his family's here. So Ryan Nemeth and his dad is in the audience, which we will see them later. Which then they did a good job of planting in my brain. I was like, okay, family's here. So I've been trained. If the family is in the ring, it's about to go be on and popping by the end of this. So when we come back to the arena, we hear Steve Macklin's music. And we were told on Thursday in a little pre-taped video promo, Macklin was going to make his presence known at Rebellion. So Macklin's music hits. He comes down. He's in his wrestling gear, so I'm like, okay, he's about to have a match, but it's about to go down. First, we get the good piece of news that it seems, I haven't been scoured in for anything official, but it seems that Steve Macklin has signed a new contract with TNA, which makes me super happy. I like Steve Macklin. I like his whole gimmick. So, I mean, he's in the ring. He's in his wrestling gear, so fantastic. And he has signed a new contract, but all his demands have been met. But he wants to have a match at Rebellion, and he wants to do it now. Then the best authority figure across any promotion comes out, Santino, the deputy of authority, Steve McClain. Can we just take a moment of how much I've been enjoying Santino as this on-screen authority figure for TNA since, you know, they brought him on? He's just so freaking good, man. He's so funny. You can't teach that kind of charisma.
He's just, you know, he's playing a character, but you forget that he's playing a character because he is so on all the time and it just feels so natural.
It is so good. But Santino's on the top of the ring and he tells the audience and us watching that, you know, you signed a contract to have a new contract, Steve Macklin, but I also just got done signing somebody new and he's raring for a match just like you and he's ready to go. And so music hits, the camera stays on Steve and the ring as the music hits, everyone's watching this play. Then everyone starts losing their minds about what they see on the screen, which was very nice of them not showing us. And why was everyone losing their mind? Well, they started with a close-up shot of some very long wavy hair and a Puerto Rican flag in the butt pocket. And immediately, Andrew, I don't know about you, but excuse my French, I lost my absolute gourd and I lost my shit. And I was a little schoolgirl because who has returned to TNA but to Mike Santana himself? And I was so surprised and I was so giddy. I was like, oh my gosh, they signed Santana. Let's go.
Yeah, this, I mean, I just got goosebumps again thinking about it. He had made a comment in one interview he had recently about, you know, being open to the idea of returning to TNA. He's been kind of, you know, I was bummed when Santana and Ortiz broke up, but I respect him wanting to, you know, be a singles competitor and, you know, try to move on to a new stage in his life. And have him show up here in TNA at this point with people like, you know, following behind people like Nick Nemeth and Mustafa Ali. This was huge. Like, this was huge for TNA. I think this is going to be huge for Santana. I think, you know, it's huge for us as the fans. And to have him come in and have this moment, like, it was so awesome. It was so good. I was so happy. I mean, I think this was probably my high point of the night, which is crazy because we're like halfway through the night. And, you know, kudos to Steve Macklin. Congrats to him for, you know, re-signing. I'm happy that he gets to stay there. I think he's another great performer. And, you know, kudos to him for taking this and being willing to take the loss to Santana, because I was like, no way are they signing him, bringing him in like this and having him losing, like even if against Steve Maclin. So like before we even got the match, I was so hyped. I already knew I was going to be so excited for this. And then the match we got was just like, it was such a great way to show what Santana can do. You know, I forget how, you know, good size of a dude he is, to see him up against someone like Steve Maclin, to see the things that he can do, because he brings in very much of this, like, it's got shades of Lucha Libre in it, but it's also American style and it's international style. And he's wrestled so long as a tag team competitor that he's showing a lot of stuff that we haven't really been able to see for him in the bulk of his career. And this is what I love about TNA, is they have the focus to be able to do stuff like this and make it feel special. They don't have 3 or 4 shows a week. They don't have, like, you know, hundreds of people on their roster. We get to see really special things from the people that are there consistently, and we get to really enjoy the how special it is to get moments like this of new performers coming in, either long term or just for special moments. But to see this, like, I hope we're seeing the building of the next, like, decade of TNA, and who we're going to see as, like, oh yeah, you know, this person's run as the world champion, this person's run as the knockout champion, this person's run, these, you know, this team's run as tag team champions, you know, X division champion, all these kind of things. And I think Santana, just like Nemeth and Ali, bring in the quality of saying, like, yeah, these are world champions, you know? So I was just so ecstatic to see him appear and be here. My moment of the night, hands down.
Oh, absolutely. And again, me and you, we were together when we watched this thing. I was like a little kid, because the history with TNA and Santana and Ortiz and LAX and all that too was one of my first introduction. And I want to take a moment too. It's a shocker to nobody. Me and Andrew are POCs. We are people of color. And specifically for me, when I was growing up and I saw clips of LAX, you know, from TNA back into the early 2000s and whatnot, for me, I was just like, there's not a lot of wrestlers that look like me. And so Santana and Ortiz were one of the few introductions. I was like, wow, wrestling is really cool. And to see my Puerto Rican homie Santana come back to TNA and represent, you know, the Boricuas on the planet, man, as a 30-something year old now, full circle moment for me. I'm super excited. And really quickly, this match we got between the two of them was baller too. Like, holy crap, man. They both went at it. And man, Santana just hasn't lost a step. And I have an affinity for him. If you haven't watched the Chris Van Vliet interview Santana did with him, like, that has made me respect Santana so much more. More so, I mean, I've had a bunch of respect for him before, but this made me fall in love with him as a person outside of his character too. The match was stellar, and we've already kind of covered it. You said it, Andrew, yourself. It's good. Like, Maclin is the homie for life for re-signing and then being and putting over Santana in this capacity. This was a fantastic match. I am looking forward to seeing Santana in TNA now.
Yeah.
So we go from one feel-good moment to another stellar moment too, because next up we had our TNA World Tag Team Championship match. We have the champions, the system, being represented in this capacity by Eddie Edwards and Brian Myers, taking on the team of Speedball Mountain, Speedball Mike Bailey, and Trent Seven himself. One thing that I want to point out is that commentary made it an effort to tell us, and I forgot about this, but I was happy they reminded us, this is Trent's first time in a TNA World Tag Team Championship match, because this is Mike Bailey's second since at Hard to Kill. Trent was supposed to be in that match, but because of travel issues, Bailey teamed up with Laredo Kid, and Laredo Kid stepped in. And so this is Trent's first shot at the Tag Team Championships. And Andrew, I'm just going to let you go with it. As a resident tag team expert, you tell me why other companies need to look at this match and TNA in general of how to do tag teams.
I mean, this was great because all four of these people have very specific styles and they excel at their styles incredibly. You know, Brian Myers, I think, you know, like a lot of people, someone who got overlooked in other promotions, and his time in TNA, whether he's been with Moose or on his own or with other partners, like, he has shown that he is a phenomenal wrestler. Eddie Edwards, obviously, has had a long career. All of these guys, like, they've all had, like, 20-year careers. Mike Bailey is just, I think, one of the most underrated wrestlers. Like, he's someone who I have never seen him have a bad match, and he's someone that just flies under most people's radars. And him with Trent Seven brings such different styles together that it's just so fun to watch. Excuse me. But the two teams together put on a showcase. They showed not only their individual style, but how they work together. Bailey and Seven have really started gelling and putting their styles together as a tag team. And I think the best thing about this match, we both figured that the system was going to come out of this as the victors. We were feeling pretty strongly about it. But they hit, you know, their finisher, one of their finishers, the backpack stunner into the elbow drop, didn't get the victory. Speedball Mountain hit that tornado kick into the half and half suplex, didn't get the victory. We were going into this thinking, I'm coming into the end of this. I'm not sure. I think anyone could win this. So that's what really made this great.
I was in awe of what we got. In fact, I don't have a lot of notes of this. Speedball Mike Bailey, living up to his moniker of Speedball, was basically a driving force for all four of these men, just hopping all over the place, flipping all over the place, hitting with his martial arts. Like, and this, I want dream booking right here. I don't know if it would ever happen, but when she gets more comfortable with her character, if we ever want to have a true Forbidden Door, I would love to see Speedball Mike Bailey versus Lola Vice. I think, or just have them go on a weird intergender tag team run, like, would be fantastic. But Mike Bailey, to me, is someone who has done a very good job of being able to showcase that, yes, you can incorporate, like, jujitsu and mixed martial arts into wrestling, because I feel that Speedball has been able to is good at both and is able to blend it seamlessly and adapt to whoever he's fighting. But Trent Seven also giving us that gritty British style of wrestling, super fantastic. Some lots of headbutts, lots of chops, fantastic. But man, the vets that are Eddie Edwards and Brian Myers have been in this game for a very long time, and they have not lost a step. And this was just a phenomenal tag team match. And even though I would have liked to see Speedball win, the system did retain, but holy crap, man, this lived up to what I wanted this match to be.
Absolutely. You know, it was great. And I think the story they told for the system to win this, and this plays into later on in the night too, but with the way the system won, even though they are heels and they do kind of take advantage, you know, having Alicia Edwards at ringside, the way that they won solidifies that, yeah, they might be dirty sometimes, but they're still really good. And yeah, Mike Bailey, you know, we talk about what are matches that you would show someone who's never watched wrestling to show them what wrestling can be. Still, one of my top in that list would be Mike Bailey versus Will Ospreay. And I think Will Ospreay is probably the greatest wrestler of his generation and one of the best going right now. And I put Bailey up there being able to hang with someone like him. So I'm excited to see where we go from here. But kudos to both these teams. They knocked it out of the park. This was, if you want to see how tag team wrestling should go, this is what you should watch.
100% agreed. And, you know, between this and, you know, the moment that we got with Macklin and Santana, the feeling kept going on an upward incline, because then we get into our Hoss match of the evening, or at least one of the two, because our big Hoss matches ended up going back to back with this one. First one being in our men's division. This is Josh Alexander versus Hammerstone 3. This is the third in the trilogy of matches we've gotten with them. And this was a last man standing match. Josh picked up the first victory at Hard to Kill. Hammerstone got his lick back at Sacrifice after being signed. And after some back and forth and some mind games between the two of them, the only way this was truly going to end was in a last man standing match. And when I tell you, these two boys prove to me that you do not, outside of the tax that we got, they had a last man standing match that was phenomenal, fantastic, and outside of the tax, it did not require any other weapons except for their skill set. Because, woo, man, these boys went to kill each other. It was hard-hitting, it was brutal, and they didn't even use any weapons. I was like, oh my goodness. They just used their wrestling prowess and their skill sets to murder each other for our entertainment, Andrew.
Yeah.
This match blew my mind of how crazy it got just from them hitting each other.
Well, and it was, even though, you know, it's a last man standing, so it's inevitably going to have some slowed down parts because you got to wait for that 10 count. They made it so brutal and so rough. I mean, this was the football equivalent of professional wrestling because it was just constant high impact moves from two powerhouses. I think they used Hammerstone really well to, you know, really give Josh that adversity to overcome and show how tough and tenacious he is. I think it was the best of their three matches because of how brutal it was, because they just went at each other. I mean, this was watching two guys just hit each other until one of them couldn't get back up. And there were several moments when Josh was struggling to get back up. His ear got busted open, you know, not purposefully, but really just sold into that. Seeing him, you know, out of breath, dazed, blood dripping off of him, trying to get back, getting up at 8, 9, having to roll out of the ring and like use the apron to be able to stand up was incredible. Like you said, I love the fact that the only thing we saw get used, other than like ring posts and barricades, were the tacks, which still technically didn't really play into the finish. And the tax aside, the fact that we saw Hammerstone hit a nightmare pendulum from the top turnbuckle onto the tax was
holy crap. I was like,
yeah,
I was speechless. Like, I was like praying. I was like signing the cross the whole continue. Oh my gosh, that was a nutty spot.
I mean, the fact that they even set it up but then hit it was incredible. The fact that Josh got up from that and continued the match was awesome. I think I am content if this is the end of this feud between the two of them, because I'd like to see where Hammerstone goes from here, because I think this just shows that he can step up to anybody and he's a great heel. Josh, you know, continues to just be the unstoppable force in TNA, the never die, you know, never say die attitude. So this was, even though this did slow down the night as far as the speed at which we worked through things, it did not slow down the intensity. It was a phenomenal match from both these guys.
Yeah, and then Josh picking up the win with that brutal C4 spike on the stage alone. Like, I am happy Josh will no longer be naked without his headgear now, so it's fantastic to watch. I think Josh winning in this, you know, trilogy makes sense to me. But damn, Hammerstone made a statement, and now that he's officially signed to the roster, I am very excited to see where the paths for Josh and Hammerstone lead next to us as we go into our next trilogy of pay-per-views with Under Siege, Against All Odds, and then leading into the third Big Four of the year, Slammiversary in July, which we'll talk a little bit about that. Okay, we then get the final part of Jonathan Gresham's like four-part docu-series, you know, him embracing this new character. I'm just going to leave this here. Like, when you allow wrestlers to have creative control over their characters, we get cinema like this. Holy crap. I am super excited, Andrew, for this new iteration of the Octopus character for Jonathan Gresham that he had in Ring of Honor. Like, woo, I cannot wait.
Yeah, they've done a really great job of these promos of really adding some kind of mythology to Jonathan Gresham and giving us some intrigue into who is this new version we're going to get coming in. You know, we haven't seen him since his match with Mike Bailey, which was still an impact. These promos have been phenomenal, the way that they've set it up and told some of the story. And then the way that they set this one up for the end was just, it's like watching the birth of a supervillain or a horror movie villain. Like it just was great. I felt like I was watching a trailer, and I'm so excited to watch the movie in movie theaters. I cannot wait for him to come back. I can't wait to see where he's going to go from here, who he's going to go after, because we know Jonathan Gresham can go in the ring. We know he brings a very unique style of very technical wrestling with a strong power set. But now you add to it this kind of like horror, kind of dark genre to it. It's going to be awesome. And I just cannot wait for him to show up. I'm ready. Like next episode of TNA, let's see him there. I'm ready for it. Let's see it. Let's see something. Like, I want to start seeing things pop up during people's matches. I want to see him show up. I want to see more promos. Let's get it.
Yep. And now this is perfect because we ended the, you know, while Hard to Kill was the start of this new era of TNA, No Surrender and Sacrifice and leading into Rebellion is like the 3-month season that has been this chapter of TNA. And now we're entering the next chapter for the summer, which is going to be, like I said, Under Siege, Against All Odds, Slammiversary. I'm here for it. I'm super excited. And, you know, my excitement continued because normally I don't like overbooked messes, but I was hooping and hollering the whole entire time for this match. So in our semi-main event for Rebellion for the Knockouts World Championship, we have Jordynne Grace defending her title against the winner of the 8-4-1 match a couple weeks ago on TNA and Steph DeLander, the queen of the death match. Though Maki Ito might fight her for that title. But anyways, I digressed. First and foremost, when we talk about Haas matches, we got the men's. This was the women Haas match of the evening. And when I tell you, Andrew, because you pointed this out and visually it was there, Steph powers over Jordynne. I was like, holy crap, man. These girls went at it and they were knocking each other senseless this match. This blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, the size difference. I mean, I think there's like a 7-inch height difference. So we're talking like Stone Cold and the Big Show kind of size difference. You know, it was crazy to see someone who was not just taller, but of at least close build to Jordynne Grace. So she didn't just have the height, but she also has the power behind that height. So I think one of the best things we got out of this was we've seen Jordynne be dominant in other matches. You know, she beat Trinity and she was able to counter Trinity's speed and technique with her power and technique. We've seen her go against two other competitors in Zaya and Tasha and just really be that juggernaut, that powerhouse. What we saw in this was how does Jordynne overcome someone who's bigger and strong, as at least as strong as she is. And it was great. These are the kind of matches that really make a title run important or monumental, because the champion has to overcome odds. And even before we got into the other shenanigans, we saw her struggle to constantly try and get past the power and size of Steph. This was awesome to see. I loved it. Both of these two are phenomenal performers. Steph showed in this match what we already knew about Jordynne, and that's that these two could not only be world champions here, but really wherever they want to go, wherever they want to sign, they can be world champions in any of the other companies. I know Steph is a big independent name, but if she wanted to sign to TNA, she wanted to sign to AEW, WWE, New Japan, any of those places, like any of them, she could easily be their world champion, go up against any of their top women and have phenomenal matches. You know, I'd love to see Steph versus Rhea, you know, Steph versus Toni Storm, Steph versus Athena, you know, just you name them, and I'd be there to watch it. And just as much Steph versus Jordynne again, I'm down to watch that again, because this match was phenomenal. This was such a smart choice. We were looking at, like, going into Rebellion, who's Jordynne going to wrestle? Because you know, there just didn't seem to be a top contender. And the way that they built to this match was such good storytelling, such good planning. And they did a great job, like you said, with all the shenanigans. There was a lot, but it did not take away from it. And even though we got some big pops from some surprises, and I think may have been a little different had Matt Cardona still been there, it didn't take away from what Jordan and Steph did.
Absolutely not, I think. And it also, like, this was one of the few instances where shenanigans enhanced the storytelling in the match itself. So let's dissect that a little bit. This match is going, Steph and Jordan are killing it in the ring. And then we get the ref, which kind of kicked it this all off for this whole entire finishing sequence. The ref gets kicked, you know, gets knocked out. Jordan's checking on them. Good hands, and Steph, like, try their best to get on Jordan. Steph hits Jordan with the title. The ref is knocked out as Steph goes for the pin still. So the good hands take the referee shirt, put it on, and try to do the count, but it doesn't work. Then it becomes a 3-on-1 as Jordan has to face Steph and the good hands. Then the lights go out the first time. Then the lights come back on, and who's in Jordan's corner but PCO of all people? It's kind of crazy to watch. Oh my goodness, this is nuts. So he takes care of the good hands. Steph gets weird and tries to flirt with PCO, which doesn't work. We almost got a choke slam on Steph, which I was like, yes, intergender. But then Pawn comes out to take care of PCO. And then the thing that made me excited, not that I'm saying that normally under circumstances this would be bad, but TNA is the only company that does this, at least for television-wise. Jordan gets in Khan's face, and Khan pushes her to the ground, like sends her flying across the ring. I was like, oh no, what's about to go down? The good hands, Steph, and Khan are about to take out Jordan. Lights go out again. And who else should come back? But we have the return of Mr. Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down himself, Sami Callihan. Take care of Khan. Steph's trying to escape. Sami back into the ring to allow Jordan to hit the juggernaut driver. Second referee comes down. 1, 2, 3, your winner and still your Knockouts World Champion, Jordan Grace. Again, lots of shenanigans. It was a fun finishing sequence, but the shenanigans enhanced what we got prior to that. And I really hope Steph sticks around a little bit longer. I want to see her at least a couple more weeks.
Well, and to your point about how TNA handles this stuff, I like that even commentary, like they never, like at one point it was Khan getting ready to do the next snap on Jordan and the good hands were in there. And they were never like, oh, you know, they can't do this to her. Like she's a woman and yada, yada, yada. Especially because Jordan got her title shot by the winning a gauntlet that was men and women. And everybody, like it was everybody, genders aside. No matter what it was, you got to be in that match. And Jordan came out of that victorious. They made the point of saying this isn't fair because it's 3-on-1. So it wasn't that it was like, oh, this is a guy attacking a woman. It was, these are three professional wrestlers attacking a single professional wrestler. The numbers aren't fair. And we got to see that all kind of play out, and people got to be physical with each other. You know, we saw Jordan, you know, get to use some of her power in that case. And it was a great return for Sami Callihan, too. It was fun. I have a feeling that he was going to come back no matter what, especially with the fact that it was going to be Matt Cardona involved. So it was fun to just see that pop. Fun to see them, you know, really at the end of it, you know, raise Jordan's hands, really say, you know, like, no, this is your moment. Like, you won this. This is for you. Like, we were just here to help kind of a thing. So, yeah, it was a fun, fun match. And I would love if we get to see Steph around in TNA for a little while.
Absolutely. I would love to see Steph stick around a little bit. But if this is the end of her tenure for this temporary time at TNA, man, this has been a really fun build. The contract signing was fantastic. And just, I want good things for Steph. She's killing it since getting released from NXT during that whole entire massive cut, you know, which was nuts to see. I love you, Steph. We cut to commentary team, and they're talking about how we only got one match left for the evening, but they tell us to look forward to lots more this summer for TNA. We have Under Siege coming up in 3 weeks on May. And then they will be returning to Chicago in June for Against All Odds. But then we get the one announcement that I was looking forward to the most in this evening of this pay-per-view. The next Big Four pay-per-view is Slammiversary. And we get a date and we get a location. Slammiversary 2024 will be taking place Saturday, July 20th, with tapings happening the following day, Sunday, July 21st, coming from the Verdun Auditorium in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. So we're returning to Canada for the Big Four. I was like, that's going to be fantastic. So before we get to our main event, we're going to take a quick break for a hot second. And when we come back, we will head into the final stretch where we review our main event. So stick around, grab a snack, and we will be right back. So don't go nowhere. We're back. Hi. So this is the first time ever that we got to use the BRB screen. So I'm super happy for that. Thank you, Andrew, for allowing me to do that. But let's finish strong, because after we get the announcement of Slammiversary, then get into our main event. The TNA World Championship is on the line, and we have Moose defending his title against the Wanted Man himself, Nick Nemeth. Man, like, there is not enough words to express how happy I was. I love Nick. I kind of wanted him to win. But the fact that Moose was able to win this match clean without any shenanigans is not only a testament to the character that we have, you know, built Moose up to be in terms of his wrestling character, but I believe it's a smart move on TNA's part. They're like, oh, the only reason Moose won because the system got involved in shenanigans. No, Moose beat Nick clean because Moose got the better of him in that particular night. This was a phenomenal main event. This was great. I can't even express my thoughts right now because of how much I was smiling from beginning to end in this match. And just from beginning to end, we told a story in the ring. But
yeah,
Andrew's thoughts.
This was a world title match. You know, this is what it should feel like. This is what it should look like. Both of these guys felt like they were world title quality. You know, I mean, Moose is a huge dude, super powerful, super athletic. Nick Nemeth showed that he could keep up with someone like that. And Moose showed that he could keep up with someone with the experience that Nick Nemeth has and the speed and the athleticism that Nick Nemeth brings into it. It was an incredible match. I love that the system got booted out super early on in this, because it also meant we got to focus on these two as wrestlers. And like you said, we got to see Moose get a clean victory out of this. And even though in the tag team match there was some shenanigans in there too, when it came down to it, ultimately it was the system being a smart tag team, taking out one of their opponents and then, you know, targeting the other one to get a clean victory there too. I think what we're seeing from this is you might not like the system's approach. You might not like their attitude. You might not like some of the things that they do during their matches. But for the most part, when it comes down to it, they can beat their opponents cleanly, especially in the big matches. So to see Moose come out of this, what it does is it shows that they're not just dangerous as a faction, but what makes them dangerous is individually they're also dangerous in what they do. Moose is not just the world champion because he got a team behind him. He is the world champion because he's one of the best in TNA. And he's another person who I think could also be up there facing any of the other world champions from any of these other promotions. It was a great match. There was a part of me that was bummed that Nick Nemeth lost, but I think what we're seeing from this is just not the end of this story. We both picked Moose to come out of this victorious, and I think that we're going to see a build to a rematch between the two of these guys, because I mean, the match that we got this time was phenomenal, and the match that we could get going forward in the future is, I think, will be even better. Yeah, this was a great match. This was up there for one of my matches of the night. I don't even know if I have a match of the night, because I was so overwhelmed by all of the different matches that we got. But this was a great, great main event, great world title match, and a great just match between the two of these guys.
Absolutely. And I'm going to spoil it before we get to our final rating too. But you want to know what my match of the night, Andrew, was? The entire Rebellion pay-per-view. Like, okay. So Moose wins. We'll talk about the ending, because that also popped me a little bit hard. I was super excited to see what direction this goes to. But I want to get on my soapbox a little bit really quickly before we get into that ending, because of the fact that, and we talked about this when we got done watching Rebellion, and we said it at the very beginning, TNA is like a really interesting case of how to find success for the things that work. Because a lot of the critiques, people are like, well, I would watch TNA if it was on a larger network. They need to get a better TV deal. I'm like, do they though? Because they have managed to find success by doing all these pre-tape stuff, which not only allows us to watch the things that we're building towards these pay-per-views, which are really necessarily outside of special episodes, the only things that are live are their pay-per-views, and everything is pre-taped. However, it also allows the wrestlers to go out and do other shows and other promotions too. Like literally Jake Something and Speedball Mike Bailey are a tag team in another independent promotion. I want to see those two fight it in TNA though. That's fantastic, but I digress. So they have found, TNA has found a way to find success in the smaller thing. And I need people to kind of wrap their head around the fact that TNA by all measures is successful. They just don't have the large corporation backing that certain other companies do, and that is totally okay. They have managed to sell out most of their pay-per-views for the last 7 to 8 months, according to reports, too, doing these smaller venues by promoting all of their talent and utilizing everything. I need people to stop sleeping on TNA and stop calling it this little independent promotion. I'm looking at you, JVL. I'm calling you out live on stream, my boy. Love you, though. You were fantastic. And I know it's all in fun, but I need people to start getting into TNA like we get into TNA, because I think people would be shocked of how consistently quality good this wrestling is. That's just me, though. I'm very passionate, and I will defend my little TNA corner of the wrestling universe to anybody who is willing to listen. I will defend these boys and girls and non-binary folks to anyone. Y'all need to start watching TNA. Thank you for coming to my TED.
Yeah, it's like I said earlier, I think it's TNA, the previous TNA and Impact and all that stuff was trying, they were in that race that everyone seems to be stuck in. It's like, I think most people are pretty sure that WWE is going to be the number one thing. You know, they're the NFL, the MLB or whatever of professional wrestling, especially in the United States. But, you know, AEW now is kind of in that second place, challenging them, kind of running in this, like these races against each other. And then we have other promotions that are smaller that are never going to be up there. I think TNA has resolved itself to be high quality, but not concerned about what other people are doing. You know, they've figured out the size that they need to be to not only be successful, but to have growth. You know, they are growing, but they're not trying to do it too fast. They're not trying to be what they used to be. They're not trying to be a different company. They're trying to be good wrestling. And I think, you know, people want to say that it's an independent promotion, and I don't think that's an insult anymore, because, you know, you look at companies like GCW, which is an independent promotion, and they put on some of the craziest, most interesting cards that I've seen. You've got a lot of other places that bring in performers from all these other companies that do this stuff. And I think TNA is like, it's like the top of the indies. They're like the indies that became sponsored. You know, it's, they're, they're doing what the independent shows are doing on a bigger scale, and it's working. We're getting to see all of these surprise appearances. We're getting to see people do things that they want to do. People being respected. They're treating their wrestlers equally. You know, we're seeing women, men, non-binary wrestlers, wrestlers from all different kinds of ethnic backgrounds, from different cultures, all being put on the same pedestal, and not only being put there, but all collaborating together. And it genuinely seems that everyone wants to work together to have the best that they can have. And TNA seems to be respecting that. And we talked a bit about, you know, the departure of Scott D'Amore. And I think people were worried about that. And I think, if nothing else, at least what seems to have happened is they're taking that culture that they saw that was like, okay, the people that are working for us want that culture. So even though we may have parted ways with the person who really helped build that, we're not going to get rid of that, which is what I think is what has kept a lot of the performers happy, because they get to keep that culture in their company. And it's what's making people come over here, because they want that. They don't feel the need like, oh, you've got to get signed to these other two companies because then otherwise you're not successful. And that's somebody else's idea of what success is, not your own. And being here in TNA, not only do they get to come here and be themselves, tell the stories they want to tell, but they also get to help uplift the TNA divisions and titles and the company itself, which has a long history, a great history. They get to help build that up to show, like, our world title is just as important as these other world titles. Our tag teams are just as important. Our knockouts are just as important as the other women's divisions. You know, all of these things that we're doing are just as important and should have just as much respect. But on top of that, they show that these things should have the same respect across the board. And I think that's one of the greatest things that we get from TNA, is we get to see that being built and we get to see it being respected. And they seem to have found that niche that just it allows them to flourish. And honestly, it keeps a lot of the BS that we get from these other companies trying to one-up each other, make remarks at each other, do these kind of things. And in their storytelling, get so lost in, you know, we're telling this story. Okay, well, now we're going to tell this one. I know we're telling this one. And these people are over here. And, oh, well, that'll make more sense if you watch this other show. But, you know, and then, like, these people are doing this thing, and then suddenly they're not. We don't get that in TNA.
No, and it makes me appreciate that of all 9 hosts who are involved in BC WrestlePod, that me, you, and Will get the privilege and the luxury to be able to review consistently good wrestling, because it keeps me from being jaded sometimes, but it also reminds me to appreciate all the hard work that everyone, from both the talent, backstage folks, to, you know, the camera people in TNA, to make TNA be this bigger than life kind of promotion. And it just makes me super happy to do so. All right. So I'm going to get off my soapbox for a little bit, so because we got one more thing to talk about. The System come out in those track suits, which, by the way, I need them to sell on TNA Shop for us, because I would wear that thing in a heartbeat for these reviews. But the System come out to celebrate Moose's win. But then we start to see some glitches happening on the board, and we get to the inevitable lights out that we saw in the Go Home show. We keep getting this repeat of a distorted voice saying lights out, with these really staticky and horrifying, like, images and whatnot. It's getting crazy. The lights go out, and then there's a couple of seconds where the audience is trying to figure out what is happening, and so is the System. And then, thank you for miking up the ring, because then, of course, we get the sound of the cacophony of something that we're all familiar with, and we just get the yeah. Because who has returned to TNA? Not Matt Hardy. Oh, no, no, no. We get broken Matt Hardy back in TNA. He takes out Moose, and broken Matt Hardy is holding that championship up as TNA Rebellion goes off the air for the night. Look, say what you will about his tenure in a previous company. Broken Matt Hardy has been one of my favorite characters within recent modern wrestling because it is just so out there, so outlandish, but it allows the wrestler to be super creative. Andrew, I gotta know, you're familiar with the work of Broken Matt Hardy in some capacity. How do we feel about him coming back to TNA for, you know, whatever this is about to be?
I think this is great. You know, I know Matt Hardy is kind of on the wind down of his career. I think this, other than the Hardy Boys at their height, I think as a singles competitor, I think this is probably the greatest iteration of Matt Hardy that we've ever had. It was so creative. It felt like this was the version of Matt Hardy that if you let him, like, what's the character that you want to make? What's the, like, what's the Matt Hardy that you want to be iconic, that this was what he decided to create? You know, it's like, you know, we've talked a lot recently about Bray Wyatt and that character, and this feels from Matt Hardy, and I know they worked together obviously when they were both in WWE, but that feels like this, where it's like it just feels so natural and such a part of his creation that getting to see this one last time before he does actually retire is phenomenal. I think having him back in TNA, even, you know, if he's other places, getting to do this is such an awesome moment for TNA to get to experience. And it's the same thing as, like I was saying, you know, with people like Steph and things like that, where it's like, even if we only get to see them for a brief period of time, TNA doing things like this is what makes it so special, because they are so much more open to bringing people in for one-offs or for short periods of time and letting them do interesting things. This is what we get. You know, it's going to be fun to see what they do with this. It's going to throw so much possibility into what TNA can do over the next, you know, period of time that we get to see him here. And it was completely unexpected. You know, I know there are a lot of people speculating about what, you know, Matt Hardy was going to do after AEW, but I think this, just getting him to see here, it was one of those, like, sure, it could happen, but we don't know. So yeah, it was phenomenal.
It was. Hi, Will. Will is in the chat, just chatting with us right now. So it's fantastic. But as you were saying, Andrew, I think this, if this is the final chapter for, you know, Matt Hardy, I'm kind of glad that he has come back to TNA, but who knows if it's going, he's going to stay for a long term, if it's a short term. But in the words of my favorite drag queen, Trixie Mattel, I'm not here for a long time, but I am here for a good time. And I think Broken Matt Hardy is going to provide us some with some good entertainment. I want one final deletion match before he leaves TNA to wherever he's going to next. I need a final deletion match because those are the wildest things I've ever seen, but it's fantastic. But with that, Andrew, we've come to the end of another Grapple Gurus review. We officially reached the end of our review for TNA Rebellion. So, gone through everything, talked about everything that happened from the backstage, to the promos, to the matches itself. Now, we do the last thing that we must do, and we must give a final rating. And to clarify, I want to include the countdown show because it was part of the product of what we saw last night. So, what is your final rating for TNA Rebellion 2024?
So I gave it a 9. This card was nonstop from beginning to end. So much fun, so exciting. Even in other cards that haven't had the greatest buildup for TNA, by the time we got to the, you know, pay-per-view, it just was so much fun, and this continued that. There was some really great build into this, great stories going in and coming out of this. It was just a phenomenal card across the board. I kept expecting to come down from the excitement that I had from, you know, the match or the segment that we just watched going into the next thing, and it just kept me going. It was just like waiting for, you know, it's like a roller coaster, and you're like, okay, this has got to be the end. We got to wrap it up. And you're like, oh, nope. Here goes the next corkscrew. Here goes the next flip. Here goes the, you know, it was just so much fun. Such an exciting night. And, you know, credit to TNA. They did it again.
Yeah. I didn't know how they were going to be able to continue what they did, because Hard to Kill was a strong opening for TNA in this new era for them. But then we consistently got good stuff. And I agree with you. I give Rebellion 9 out of 10 for me. This was a phenomenal pay-per-view. I had a fun time. We concluded some stories. We started some new ones. All the matches were phenomenal. And even the matches that weren't necessarily my favorites were still very, very solid. And this was one for the books. I need everyone to watch Rebellion because this is another strong contender for probably one of my favorite pay-per-views of the year. And we're only in April, but I'm adding to my list of favorite matches because, I'm gonna be honest, the other hosts are going to have to fight us to not just include all the pay-per-view matches from TNA on the best of 2024 when we get to the end of the year. But they can try if they will. Andrew, I had such a good time reviewing this and watching it with you. It's been a busy 2 days for both of us, but I would not want to do this without any other person but you and Will. So, Andrew, I appreciate your input. And, man, this was a fun time. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. You know, it's bummed that Will couldn't join us for this week of TNA and especially for this card. So, but yeah, it was phenomenal. And I'm excited that I get to not only experience TNA every week. You know, it's one of those things that I got back into it to start reviewing it with you all. But if this was to stop tomorrow, I'd still be watching TNA for sure out of all of the other promotions. And the fact that I get to watch it with, you know, people that I get along with so well, enjoy sharing that experience with, and people who genuinely enjoy the product itself and the performers, it's the healthy version of being a wrestling fan.
Yeah. Will, the sentiment is also there. We miss you, bud. And I am happy to have this trio do TNA because I wouldn't do it without anyone else. All right. Well, we got to get up on out of here. We've been here for almost 2 hours. But those of you that tuned in to this rendition of Grapple Gurus, thank you so much. We will be back with another crew. Andrew is going to be tagging out and he will be tagging in JVL, the Professor, and Adolfo, as those three will be joining me tomorrow to cover AEW Dynasty, which is happening in a couple of hours, speaking of which. But me and Andrew are going to go rest up and go enjoy ourselves to be able to watch that tonight. But from all of us here at BC WrestlePod, especially the Takedown Troop, thank you so much for joining us. And remember, take care of yourself, love one another, stay iconic. But more importantly, you always deserve to finish your story. We'll catch you tomorrow for AEW Dynasty. But until then, for now.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another Vibe Tribe production. What's going to happen next time? Well, you're going to have to tune in to find out. But until then, remember, take care of yourself, love one another, and as always, make sure that you keep the good times rolling. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you next time.